What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. It's time to get this party started with Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to FP Presents CF Montreal Three Questions. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
There we go. Took a while to react. Welcome to CF Montreal Three Questions, week 20 some odd game and chat. They're all running together. I'm Amy Walsh, and I'm joined by Ollie Brett. How are you doing, Ollie?
I'm doing well. It's officially match day 26. I don't know for the life of me what that means for us, considering there are 34 games to an MLS season, but something like 37 or 38 match days, because they actually count midweek matches. That, remember the midweek game when Miami played Real Salt Lake to kick things off? That was technically match day one. And then Miami also played on match day two, which was match day one for everybody else. So if you're confused, I'm confused, everybody else is, it's perfectly normal.
Right. Some sort of bizarre world that MLS lives in, because CF Montreal are through 22 matches now.
Yeah, match day 26.
Okay, yeah. So we'll call that CF Montreal Three Questions, match day 26.
There you go.
Diving right into CF Montreal, but there's also an important match for Canada. Tonight, you can catch on RDS with Ollie Brett and our friend Patrice Bernier. Canada to face Argentina for the second time, but in the semifinals of Copa America this time. So really looking forward to that. But CF Montreal tied Vancouver at the weekend. So they haven't lost in six matches at home, dating back to the 22nd of May, where they were embarrassed versus Forge in the Canadian Championship, or the Cup, as we like to call it here on Footy Prime. I'm sure you approve. But they fail yet again to claim all 3 points. And this is a team that certainly don't make it very easy on themselves. So I see it as they're unable to still put together a comprehensive 90-minute performance. We had Ari Lassiter back from international duty with Costa Rica, gave the side a little bit of a boost, but still missing the three Canadians in Waterman, Piet, and Chouinard, who were away with that team competing tonight versus Argentina. So Ollie, we'll go right into question one. Were the early glimmers, and I'm talking like early in terms of the season, of impressive play from Dominik Yankov just fool's gold? Because he is sacrificed at halftime for Sanusi Ibrahim, and immediately the side seems to get a boost and renewed sense of energy and urgency and tempo and purpose to the game. And that's after Yankov goes to the bench.
If you were taking Yankov off at halftime to bring on Bryce Duke, obviously we're speaking of a parallel universe, because Duke at the moment, well, it was weird, by the way. That's the first thing I didn't quite understand, how so many changes were made to the starting 11 that lost at NYCFC. I just thought, I liked the idea of squad rotation, but that just felt like it came in one fell swoop. All that to say, if you were bringing on like for like Bryce Duke for Yankov, you know, two similar profiles, then I'd say, yeah, it's a bit disappointing, because he really thinks that the other guy, who's basically the same type of player with different attributes there, but he feels he's got a better chance with the other guy. But no, you're bringing on a guy who's an out-and-out striker, looking to get in behind. I think it comes back to the issue we spoke about last week. When you look at how on paper they were set up, they were set up with three up top, right? You had Lassiter on the left, you had Joseph Martinez up top, and then you had Yankov more on the right, but who will always kind of drop in and try and find space between the lines. But that's where you need somebody permanently, to me. And that remains a huge issue. I think once the guy has come back from international duty, you have to find somebody to fill that gap between the two midfielders and the strikers. I think you need to play in a 3-5-2. And I know there's a ton of variations there, but people will understand that. Basically, what I'm looking for is whoever, or it can be one or two guys, is playing up top. There needs to be a kind of second layer in between him and the two guys playing who were at the weekend, Nathan Saliba and Victor Wanyama. That's the space where you're going to find the opportunities to make the most of the likes of Bryce Duke and Yankov. So I'm not ready to say that what we saw at the beginning of the year was just a flash in the pan, because he did score an outstanding goal against Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And that was just a week ago. And that was exactly the kind of bread and butter stuff that he loves. Find a bit of space, make it happen quick, and release it forward. In that case, it was a shot. It could also be a pass. But above and beyond the structural challenge, let's call it that, of not having somebody that's really sitting there and clear guys playing up top, my issue is that they're still playing one or at the very most two passes at a time. Again, I told you the same thing last week about NYCFC. I felt the same looking at Vancouver. You know, when you play it into Gold, you know he's laying it off or he's flicking it on. You know it's going to somebody else. For Montreal, too often you give it to one guy, controls it, lifts his head, finds another one, controls it, lifts his head, find another one. But there's no automatic find a third, find a fourth man. And that's the big challenge for the coming weeks and months for Laurent Courtois.
Do you think part of finding that fluidity is getting a guy like Yankov in an area where he's going to excel? And do you think that's part of the issue, like in terms of their structure and how they're set up? He's limited in a sense because he's not in the areas where he can do the most damage?
And probably not in areas where he's got as many options to link up. You know, if you drop in a pocket and you're good at your job, you'll know if somebody's just over your shoulder, you can let it go through your legs. Remember at the beginning of the season, there was one game, I forget where it was. I apologize for that, but he, Kokoro and Martinez started together and a lot of stuff just fell apart, but you felt that the ideas were there. A good few moments where there was a flick on, okay, the guy wasn't really, he was on the right when the pass was sent on the left, or it was left through Yankov's legs for Martinez, who decided to go in behind. But what I liked about that was the idea of bringing somebody else in the mix, looking to play for someone else rather than just controlling the ball and then starting to think about your next move. And I think that only happens once you have people in pockets where you've got an option to your right, to your left, in behind you, or just to lay it off to your midfielders, who then can maybe be the one sending somebody in deep like Sanusi Ibrahim or Matias Kokoro. So I think that's the big, big thing. There's not enough moments where you've got two or three options. You can pick one. And if you choose the right one, then you're off because you manage to suck in all the opposition. Two or three guys come in to try and get the ball off you, and that leaves an awful lot of space somewhere else on the pitch.
Perhaps the slow start was due to that heavily rotated squad, mm-hmm. where there's less understanding and less partnerships on the pitch, and then maybe the return of those reinforcements down the spine allows maybe a Bryce Duke to be pushed up, and then his play deeper into midfield has allowed him to glean an understanding of that role and what it takes in order to connect better and be that connecting piece between the deeper lying midfielders and the strikers.
And you know what? I wasn't even there yet because the Canadian internationals won't be back at the weekend. No matter what happens tonight, we're recording on Tuesday morning. So no matter what happens tonight, they have a third place game to play. So they won't be there against Atlanta. That's a really, really, really good point. Because I remember speaking to Ariel Lassiter when he started playing up top again. I asked him, you know, what did playing out wide as a wing back bring to your game? And he was clear that his understanding of what those guys, Raheem Edwards in this case, are looking for when they lift their heads, or in terms of help for releasing the ball, or even defensively, how to position yourself to help that guy make sure
to be the outlet.
He bottlenecks everything on the line. He said that was a huge learning opportunity for him. And you're absolutely right. And I hadn't thought about it. For Bryce Duke, now you know what it's like to have the ball at your feet and go, give me something. You're half hiding right now. You're not in the right position. So I don't know if I need to move right or left to make sure that the next phase of pressing is efficient. And that's going to be really interesting to see how his number 10 game adapts once he's pushed back up the pitch, because I don't see a scenario where he stays in that position at the moment, even though he's been doing okay for the last game or two.
Yep, he has done. And Saliba has done a great job next to him, I think, insulating him, especially when they're without possession. But move to the second question here. So I think Courtois, from his perspective as a coach and his growth over the course of the season, he gets the substitutions right again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the tide turning and the better second half than the first half. So is this just a natural sign of his growth as a coach? Or has he gained a better understanding of the players available to him and how they're best utilized?
It'd be interesting to go back and look at the stats, because I remember when I was doing the commentary on CF Montreal games earlier, maybe with a third of the season gone, there were an awful lot of goals scored by subs. That kind of died off a bit since. Maybe it's picking up again because obviously you've got more attacking options available. There were so many injured players for, 2 months as of earlier or mid-April. So that's interesting. Now, do you get them right because you're chasing something? Because they've also had situations where they were able to close off games this season and they struggled to do that. So that'll be an interesting one when you look at the end of the season. Are you a coach that figures it out to make sure that you go for it? Are you also a coach who's able to just bring in that guy, that boring substitution, who will kind of close things off and allow you to keep a lead? In this case, you weren't leading, so the question doesn't really apply. But yeah, A, you know your squad probably better. B, you sent a few messages to Kokoro, especially over the last few weeks. So now you're, after the stick, you're giving him a carrot, and he was obviously motivated to, for whatever reason, and I presume they're the right ones to go and show his coach that he's able to get on the match sheet. So that's a huge positive. And now that you bring back your midfielders as of next week, not for Atlanta, but for the following game, it'll be interesting to see how he manages the midfield, because you've already got now supposedly Rida Zouir, who's not happy, who wants to leave. Alessandro Biello hasn't had many minutes. Victor Wanyama, I presume, will be back to the bench fast and probably for a long time based on the season so far. What happens to Chouinard, Duke, Yankov? Because now you're going to have your full squad with fit players. And it's going to be, I think, the moment, the first time probably, that you see how Laurent Courtois manages the full squad, not just a 90-minute game where you have to find the right substitution, which you're right, he got right at the weekend.
A phrase you used there, you said after the stick, you give him the carrot. So is a carrot stick, is that your constructive criticism?
Well, the stick is definitely you're in the stands, and we're officially saying that you weren't that fit to play the game. The carrot is basically go and show us if you're actually made of the stuff that you're telling us you're made of. And fair play to Kokoro. Like I didn't have an ounce of a striker's mentality when I was playing, and I admire that so much. I mean, the time you have to put in to manage strikers who are, I'm sorry, and it's okay, they're never happy unless they're scoring. And even when they're scoring, just think about this. You have a striker, right? Let's say you play a midweek game. You played him at the weekend. You're playing him again midweek. He's on 2 goals. An hour is gone. You've got another big game at the weekend. That striker doesn't care about the next game. He just wants the hat trick. And he's going to be annoyed if you take him off. He gets a standing ovation. And you're saying, hey, you're going to be right back at it on Saturday. Now you're on an incredible streak. And he's still going to be annoyed with you. I mean, what it takes to manage strikers is incredible. And that's what makes them so valuable as well. You know, Thierry Henry saying, I remember I was there with my dad and I'd score 5 and he'd give me a rollicking in the car because I didn't score the 6th one. You know, it's just an alien to me mentality, and it's very interesting to see how it's being managed at the moment.
Yeah, it's hard for me as well to wrap my mind around it as a number six, a defensive midfielder who I knew my place in the world, and I certainly wasn't worried about stats and looking to win my, you know, 12th aerial duel to set a record or the number of tackles or whatever it was. That's just not even a consideration. So I wonder though, from a coaching standpoint, a guy like Eddie Sabrango and what he's done in his career, I wonder if a lot of that management, not necessarily of egos, but of that striker-specific mentality pieces, that a guy like him becomes invaluable as part of your staff. So you can almost offload that if you're Laurent Courtois.
Oh, wow, that's a really interesting one. I think technically, in terms of putting your arm around a guy and saying, listen, it's okay, come on, we'll do a few reps and just get back into flow of things. Maybe seeing stuff that the manager who was a midfielder won't quite see in terms of movement, maybe, or body language. Yes. In terms of doing what Laurent Simon does with defenders, what is basically put them back in their place. You know, a few years back, I had a chat with Laurent Simon about Joel Waterman, and he was saying he wasn't coachable. He thought that every time we had something to say to him, it was criticism. And it was basically telling him he didn't have it right. And I had to make him understand what I'm telling you is to make sure you're good for us and eventually for you for a next contract to go to the national team. And there was this moment, I forget when it was probably 2021 at some stage. And they just cracked the code with Waterman, who remains a guy who's very, very stubborn and has opinions, and that's okay. That's what you need as a leader. But
I know what that's about.
Yeah, exactly. But you need that basic coachability to make sure, especially when you're coming from CPL and you're looking to improve your game. And Laurent Simon has the personality to do that, to look you in the eye and say, listen, if this doesn't work out, we'll just go with somebody else because we believe in what you're able to do, but not in the way you're approaching things now. Eddie Sabrango is not that personality, not from what I know. Maybe behind the scenes, on the football pitch, in a dressing room, he is. So I think his qualities are to be used differently with the strikers. And when it's maybe for the carrot, but when it's time for the stick, I think it's somebody else and probably Laurent Courtois.
I loved how you tied all that stuff together. That's why we have you on, Ollie Brett.
Yeah, there you
okay,
go.
Yeah, I feel like we've gone down a rabbit hole, but it's been a really welcome distraction because I think it speaks to the larger game, the difference between the mentalities and the personalities between a defender and a striker, and midfielders are somewhere in between, but you don't coach them all the same.
No.
You can't square peg round hole. You really have to coach the humans, but I think you really do find unique personalities and a lot more common ground in the type of position that you play in. And goalkeepers are a whole other thing. Yep. I'm not going to throw Craig Forrest under the bus, but great goalkeepers are a special kind of breed of person. And it takes crazy bravery to do that, but they're in their own headspace.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/Footy Prime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Before we run out of time, I want to get to our third question, because tomorrow, and as much as all these points here are very and are highly relevant to what's happening with the team right now, Gabriel Gervais, who is the president of CF Montreal, but also the interim sporting director, he'll meet with media on Wednesday for a mid-season review, despite it being match day 26. So what grade would you give Ollie Brett, the side, but maybe more importantly, what grade would you give the brass at this point as we approach an important transfer window?
I'd give passing grades just because you're in the race, you're in the mix for the playoffs, considering all the injuries you've been having, considering the fact that Laurent Courtois is in his first year. I mean, they managed to keep scoring without Kokoro, without Yankov, without Martinez. If you had given me that scenario at the beginning of the year, I would have said, forget it. Like, who's going to score? Mason Toy is going to score a winner? Or, well, it kind of happened. You know, he didn't do much this year, but when he had to show up, he did on very few occasions, but they were really important ones. Sanusi Ibrahim, I didn't believe he was going to take the responsibilities he did end up carrying, and that's amazing. So I'd give it a passing grade for the football side. It'd be NA for the club, because I'll be able to answer you tomorrow. Like, everything we've spoken about, I don't know how long we've been going, we're about 20 minutes in. It's practically all irrelevant based on my anticipation of this press conference tomorrow. First of all, it might be semantics, but it's not a mid-season bilan, or how do you call that in English? Review?
The review, sure.
Right. It's a mid-year review. And I've never seen a mid-year review from a sporting director. So that tells me that there is a presidential aspect to that, which is totally normal. When you're bringing in money, you're looking for sponsorship, you're building the structure of the club as president, it doesn't start at the end of February with your first game of the season. It starts on January 1st, and your year even starts before. So first of all, what's the point of this exercise? Like, what's the objective for the club in your view? And I'm legit asking, because I don't know what to expect, yet I have an ungodly amount of questions coming Gabriel Gervais way if I'm the media and I'm a part of it. So what's the objective in this, according to you?
From my perspective, and obviously somebody who's involved with the club, but also the media perspective, is that we haven't heard from anybody except for Laurent Courtois in a very, very long time. So I think this is Gabriel Gervais saying, okay, here I am. I'm going to stand before you and I'm going to answer some questions. I don't know what the nature of those responses are going to be, but it's I'm here and I'm available, which is something that we haven't seen for a while now.
Okay, fair enough. So to me, that, and I'm not having a go at you now, I understand that it's you kind of reading between the lines. To me, that's not enough. You have to have something to say, or else you're going to be just reacting. And that was the club's really downfall for years. Before, when Olivier Renard came in, he dodged a ton of questions, but he had enough meat for everybody to feed on, so that you went, okay, he didn't answer that one, but I've got enough on this, that, or the other to go along and do a radio show, write an article, or whatever it may be. My concern now is that, look, I just took 2 minutes. I spoke about it on FC Nufinuf on BPM Sports last Saturday. I just took 2 minutes to go, right, if I was the only one in the room now, what would I kind of want to ask about? It goes from Mathieu Choignard's contract to the Olympic Stadium and the repercussions of that stadium not being available for 4 years. What does that do to your Champions League ambitions? Where are you going to the States to play your home games? I understand it's not for next year, but it is a preoccupation for the club. Stade Saputo, are the Renaults coming? Are they not? Who's in charge of hiring the next sporting director? Is it Gabriel Gervais himself? If so, perfect. What's the process? What's the criteria? Remember when he said, I'm going to take time to evaluate the situation and the structure before we go ahead and find the next sporting director? That's absolutely okay. Now, what's your assessment? The criteria for your sporting director, is there an assistant coming as well? Lucas Saputo, who's part of the analysis team, business analysis for the MLS, for this first team in Montreal, is he involved in this? If so, perfect. Can we have a chat with him? It'd be super interesting. Like, it can be a very interesting story, and it's not necessarily negative, even though people would see, oh, it stays in the family. It's an endless, endless amount of questions that can go all over the place. And if you don't have something to say, a few very specific bullet points of the message you want to put across, the danger is you'll just be reacting to the questions that are asked. And unfortunately, there might be way too many of those where you don't have the answers. So just showing up because people want to hear you, I think, can be dangerous. Now, if there's a few interesting announcements, if Gabriel Gervais has answers to all those questions, because let's be honest, they're questions that you can see coming. There's very few things that are kind of left field. It's just that we never got a chance to speak to a sporting director for the last 3 or 4 months here in Montreal. If you're ready for all that, it can be a really, really interesting exercise.
Do you think that the mid-season review is you know, either Gabriel Gervais going in front of the media, but it's under the guise of an announcement for something else?
Well, if that's the case, it's interesting. That would explain why we were invited a week in advance, which was a huge slash pleasant surprise. Because yeah. It's not you. I don't remember the last time we were invited a week ahead to a press conference. So if that's the case, brilliant. But I don't know what would that concern. Like the greatest news that could come Montreal's way for me, and that's I've been convinced of this way back when they had a USL reserve team with FC Montreal. I'm times a million convinced now that you need an MLS Next Pro. When you look at Moise Bombito and the tournament he's having at Copa America, mm-hmm. you look at Max Crépeau, who's keeping goals for the Portland Timbers. Now, we have Jonathan Sirois. Brilliant. You know, you've shown that you're able to have really quality goalkeepers produced in Quebec. But Crépeau is there. You've got Bombito. Mo Farsi is an MLS Cup champion with Columbus. And he went through their MLS Next Pro team under Laurent Courtois before he made it to Wilfried Nancy's cup-winning team. We've got so much talent here. I'm sorry. Until you have an MLS Next Pro team, you will not have the means to achieve what you say your mission is, which is to be a motor for having all of Quebec dream of greater things and develop young talents. You will develop talents. You'll develop those who will make it through anyway. Mathieu Chouanière is close to a fluke. It's because you had time available for him when he came back from injury, and Wilfried Nancy was a guy who knew him. He was really, really keen on him because he knew all the different positions he could play him in. But he's the type of guy that you will way too often drop and let go somewhere else, or maybe never allow to break through in the first team if you don't have an MLS Next Pro. It needs to happen. So if I was to wish for like a 2-second press conference tomorrow and we all go home, it would be, hi, 2025, MLS Next Pro is coming to Montreal. Good luck to you. If that was it, it would be absolutely magnificent.
And it would also give a place for a player like Rita Zuhir to 100%. Get minutes. It would give a place for Alessandro Biello. Yeah. So, I mean, this would solve a lot of problems, I think, for the first team and really make that pipeline a lot more robust, as you said, to shepherd along that talent that we know is here in this province to be mined. I mean, and this is apart from the discussion about bringing CPL to this province. This is directly applicable to this pro team and the MLS franchise that is CF Montreal.
And you're looking to make money, and that's fine. But how the club, or maybe it's the ownership group, doesn't see that the investment in that will allow you to have so many more. I am convinced you can have at least half of your starting 11. Match in, match out, coming from Quebec. Like in 2, 3, 4 years, nobody will tell me the opposite. Look at them. You should never drop a Moise Bombito. You should never drop a Mo Farsi. But I totally understand Montreal dropping them when you don't have a place to kind of test them out. If you're just signing them to send them to CPL on loan, they might say, you know what, I'll make my own way and I won't tie myself in with a 2 or 3 year contract with options that will never be my leverage. They'll be the club's leverage. I understand that. But when you're an MLS Next Pro, what you're saying is, I'll sign in Montreal. If it doesn't work out, the Red Bulls will see me. Philadelphia will see me. And all of a sudden, they might say, you know what, I'll trade for a bit of allocation money and I'll grab that kid that you have, your 21-year-old that's got no chance in hell to get a look in the first team, not because he's not good, but because you've got Samuel Piet, Victor Wanyama, or whoever it may be, Alessandro Biello in front of him. So we'll take a chance on it. That just makes incredible business sense to me. And you'll stop wasting money on guys coming in from the outside as well, because when they come in, the Lassie Lapalainens of this world, the Mason Toys as well, who you kind of have to bring back in one fell swoop because you can't bring them back gradually. You've only got the first team and you had no real reserve team worth their time. And the level was nowhere close to what it should be for MLS. So sending them with the reserve team up to now wasn't really worth it. If you have that kind of go back to the second team, get a few minutes, maybe Sunusi Ibrahim would be having the season he's having now a year and a half ago. You know, it's hard to tell, but I don't. There are only two MLS clubs who don't have an MLS Next Pro team, DC and Montreal. I just don't. If you want to produce players and that's your mission, I don't get how there's no MLS Next Pro in Montreal.
Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens tomorrow at that meet and greet with the media with Gabriel Gerva. But through 22 matches now, and then we saw the Quebec talent on display against Venezuela in that penalty shootout with Max Crepeau standing on his head, Moise Bambito undeterred by lasers in his eyes, and Ishmael Kone with the ice cold manner and composure to slot that home for the winner. So that's excellent to see, and hopefully more of that tonight. So we're Tuesday recording Canada versus Argentina. So thanks everybody. Cheers for listening. Anything else you want to add, Holly?
No. What was the referee doing with Bambito? On a scale from 1 to 2, I'm just trying to annoy you by telling you you've got a laser in your eye that you never saw. I'm just going to make this a bit more painful for you, keeping the pressure on. What was that referee doing? What a disaster.
No, I don't know, but that was the Canadian version of the Ivan Toney staring down the goalkeeper and not even looking at the ball, right? Bambito not even acknowledging the referee when he's talking to him. Like, if you have a laser in your eye, or lasers, plural, you're well aware that you have lasers in your eyes. Like, thank you, referee. I'm just going to proceed.
Yeah, and hey, by the way, he's on 10 caps, Bambito.
Incredible.
That's just madness. He was on 6 before the tournament started. Like, he's been so solid. It's incredible. Fair play to him.
Yeah, wonderful to see. It makes me think of Vanessa Gill on 6 caps when they won gold in Tokyo.
Yeah, very good point.
Yep, excellent. Okay, cheers for listening, everybody. Like and subscribe. Go check us out on YouTube. You might even see our two lovely mugs on there.
Have a nice
day. Enjoy your Tuesday, and CF Montreal face Atlanta United at Stats Pluto this Saturday. Thanks, guys. This has been CF Montreal with 3 questions.
Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter. What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/FootyPrime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Oh.